to the Being a Long-Timer panel discussion. My name is Roz, and I'm a grateful compulsive overeater. Hi, everybody. While the topic of this panel is being a long-timer, and the speakers all have experience in this particular area, this panel is open to everyone. We will introduce ourselves and qualify and speak for 20 minutes on the topic of what it's like to work an OA program for as long as each of us have worked our program. We have somebody in the audience who's willing to time this panel discussion today. Please give each speaker a 10-minute warning and then a 5-minute warning and finally a 2-minute warning. Thank you very much. Our first speaker is Vivian from Brentwood.
Oh, that's right. Hi, I'm Vivian. I'm a compulsive overeater. And I think, Roz, let's put the chair up because I think it's on the mic thing.
Of course.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Anyway, I want to thank Courtney for asking me to be here. And it says to introduce ourselves and qualify. Well, I have been abstinent since January 4th, 1983, which actually makes me 33 years abstinent as of like last week. And my abstinence, I am somebody who, when they say in the big book that you're allergic to alcohol, I personally was allergic to sugar. Very bad. So my abstinence, now they call it a food plan, but for me it was, you know, everything. This was, besides working the steps, I had to keep to this. And I have for 33 years, which is only God. Sugar, I don't eat sugar in the first three ingredients. I eat it in the fourth ingredient only. And I got this from my favorite salad dressing at the time, which was very important because we had to eat a lot of salads, and I had to have really good salad dressing, Kraft's Creamy Cucumber, which is probably made with a lot of artificial ingredients, and I probably would not even eat it today. However, it kept me alive then. So I love this topic of what it's like to be, I guess I'll stand, what it's like to be a long-timer. Because I've never really thought about that. Like, when I first came in, I was white-knuckling it a lot. God did remove the obsession to eat. For me, it was really evidenced in eating sugar, because I ate all the time, but sweet things were my thing. It was like heroin to me. And I remember walking out of Cafe Casino, which at the time was a big OA hangout, because they had a lot of good European food, but they also had a pastry section. And I remember walking into Cafe Casino, looking at the pastries and thinking, oh, they said to pray. And I thought, God, you know, I feel so embarrassed, but, you know, I sang to myself and no one even hearing. I'm still embarrassed even though nobody can hear me. God, please help me to not eat sugar. And I didn't feel like lightning hit me, but I walked out. I walked out, and that was my first day of abstinence. Len, who's also an old, long timer, remembers that I would chew so much gum because I drank a lot of diet soda and I chewed a lot of diet gum because I was so addicted to sugar. I could not stand to do that, you know, not have sugar. Even with it removed, I still needed my artificial substitutes as they were. And when I had commitments at meetings, and if you're new to OA, it's very important to get I have found for me to have a sponsor and have commitments at meetings have really kept me coming back all these years. And one of the commitments I got at a meeting was to be the coffee and tea person, which I thought was super important that we had lots of really good varieties of tea. We had lots of, you know, sweet and low. We never ran out of ingredients at my meetings, let me tell you. And also I remember eating at we ate at this place called Wildflower Cafe, which is actually still there in Santa Monica. I used to go to this Saturday morning Hill Street meeting in Overeaters Anonymous at like 10:30, and so we'd all go to lunch afterwards. I remember I ate these two huge meatballs, and I go back there. They haven't changed the menu since the 80s. So I went back like a year or two ago, and I ordered like what I used to order, and it was tremendous. Like, I used to eat so much more. These two big meatballs, like the size of my fist if I were going to punch you in the face, like that big. with a lot of sauce and a huge salad with all this cheese on it. And today I would never even eat that much. And there I was like, you know, I am abstinent. You know, like I am eating a good abstinent meal, and we would sit together and fellowship, and it was a really good time. So I think some of the things have changed food-wise. First of all, I just eat a lot healthier now, and I definitely eat less, and I don't eat Kraft Creamy Cucumber anymore. I don't even think they make it. But I have stuck to my abstinence of sugar as number four ingredient. Still to this day, starting then, I would count ingredients all the time, and I would ask the waitress, and I would ask, you know, the person in behind the counter at the deli. And that wasn't that popular then, even in California. I felt, which should get a laugh, even then, I felt embarrassed. And I had to want to stay abstinent more than I wanted you to like me. I had to be willing to stay abstinent and ask these uncomfortable questions in order to protect my abstinence. And I was willing to do that, even though I felt like cringed inside when I would ask people. You know, I still do that now, but it's not a big deal to me. And also I'm not white knuckling it anymore. And also I don't get really upset now when I go up and down the scale, which when I got here, for those of you who can't see me, I was about 15 to 20 pounds heavier than I am now. And for the people in the audience, you'll know that, you know, I'm at my, one of my skinnier times here in abstinence. I'm looking good, all right? So, which I'm really happy to be a program of attraction, because sometimes, and it's not even like I go up a lot, like I'll go up about 10 pounds at the most, which after 33 years, this being a progressive disease, you know, I would have gone up so many more pounds than that. It would have been like, you know, I don't even know how many. And I don't worry about it anymore. Like I don't weigh myself anymore. When I was in early abstinence, my sponsor suggested that I throw out my scale because I would, you know, stand on it, lean a little to the left, lean a little to the right, which is the true number, get off, get on. And then sometimes I couldn't stand anymore and I, you know, go, this was before abstinence, I'd like go eat a pie and then go stand on it again. And, oh my God, I gained 2 pounds. Oh, I want to kill myself. So I don't do that anymore. And in early abstinence, she suggested I throw out the scale. And that was one of the, and that was almost as hard as giving sugar up, let me tell you. I remember I had to think about it. And finally I was ready. I prayed for the willingness. I asked God, please give me the willingness. And I finally put it in a dumpster. And I have never bought one since. And thank God. You know, now I really don't care so much when I go. Of course, nobody cares when they go down. They're all like, hooray, hooray. We fit in our jeans better. But when you go up, I don't get so upset about it anymore. You know, I know, okay, I need to get more sponsees, or I need to pick up another meeting, or I need to do another fourth step, or, I need to pray to God more, or I need to up my meditation. You'll notice I'm doing, and besides that, since God helps those who help themselves, I think to myself, like, okay, food-wise, what am I doing? So I noticed a lot of times when I have emotional things go on is when I put on weight. Like, I was engaged to someone. It wasn't working out. I put on 10 pounds and didn't even notice, okay, for a year. And then I put on my pants that I usually go to New York in because they're wool. And I was like, oh, my God, these don't fit. What happened? So I thought, what am I doing now that I can cut out food-wise where I'm going a little crazy? And someone in OA, Veronica M., if she's listening, I've given her credit, said, why don't you not eat when you get home after a meeting? Because I would come home after a meeting at like 9 o'clock, and I would just pass through the kitchen and think, gee, I think I'd like some, you know, popcorn or whatever, or hot chocolate, or, you know, something to eat. You know, whatever it was. And if it's hot chocolate, you know, just FYI, diet hot chocolate. And I was like, okay, that's a plan, because I do not only program, I mean, it's a physical, emotional, and spiritual disease. So I have to treat the physical part too. I have to treat the spiritual part. And I think the emotional part gets treated by going to God and going to meetings, but I can't neglect the physical part either. So I do something, but it's not drastic. You know, like not eating when I get home after a meeting is not a drastic thing to do. And it takes a while then for the weight to come off. And I don't really care. You know, I don't really care. I used to like freak out about it and think it would be bad, but, you know, not a big deal. And then, you know, one day the weight is off, and that's great. I also, from the very beginning, I sponsored people. I remember somebody asked me to sponsor them after 30 days, and here's something. I always got very strong sponsorship, and my sponsor at the time, they needed somebody to host this is at Beverly Hills High School, where they used to have a lot of OA meetings. It was very strong. And now there are none for years, but it was a very strong meeting place. And my sponsor, somebody said there, well, we're not going to have anyone to do the newcomers meeting. Who wants to do it? And he, like, took my elbow and raised my hand. And I went, okay, me. And I'm like, but I only have 30 days. And they said, group conscience, is it okay? And everybody's like, yes. So I did it. You know, I was totally embarrassed. And I remember I was so on time. Like, it would said, I think I even changed the format. This is another thing I would do when I was new. I thought, this is a bad format. I wouldn't even take a group conscience. I'd be like, this, I am rewriting the format. And we would just have a new format the next week. And it got me there, you know. So now I would not rewrite the format. I would bring it to a group conscience. But it was like little things. Like, I thought, better at, you know, 8:57 instead of 8:55. Thank you for the 10-minute warning. I took commitments. I had, and I got a sponsee, like, after about 30 days. And she was much older than I was. She's probably the age I am now. And it was amazing to me. First of all, I was so flattered. Second of all, it was amazing to me that when she would call me in the morning, because I did what my sponsor told me to do. I asked her to call me. Words would come out of my mouth that only God could have put there. Because I was like, I would put on my sponsor hat somehow if she called me. And I was much more spiritual than I really was. And I think she stayed with me for like 30 days. And then, you know, she went on. But still, to that day, from this day to then, I've always had commitments. I always sponsor people. And it just gets easier and easier and more rewarding. I have to say now, too, I'm more into the big book. There just seem to be, with all 12-step programs now, there's a big, just seems like the big book and reading from the book has become more in style. People quote from it more. And before, it was more action-oriented, as I remember, and not so much, like, we used to call them big book thumpers. And it was sort of a little derogatory, like, oh, a big book thumper. But now I've gotten more into the big book, and I get into the big book when I'm having, when I'm humbled, when I'm going through pain. So recently, I'll just tell you my experience. Because this is how it's different now. I lost an election that made me really upset. And so I know when something goes wrong, I dig more into programs. So I found like three really great passages in the big book, like the actor on page 60 that talks about how we're trying to run the show. Anyone who's read the big book will go, oh, yeah, I know that one. Right? And on awakening, but reading, and that used to be Dr. Alcoholic Addict, but now it's called An Acceptance is the Answer. But reading not just that paragraph, but from page 417 to the end of the story changes in my mind how I frame things. Really, reframing is a spiritual action. Reframing makes me not need to go to the food. And then the third one, On Awakening, which even when I first came into Overeaters Anonymous, that was my first prayer. I would just, and I can still recite the action lines to myself, like, God, please, of course I can't, now that I'm in front of you, I will forget. But direct my thinking, please direct my thinking, especially divorcing it from self-pity, dishonest, and self-seeking motives, you know, on and on and on. And that, reading that too is very meaty. And going through the steps too with sponsees, here's another thing that I do that I haven't done since, when I got there, is reading the book aloud with sponsees. That has proven to be such a rewarding, experience for both of us. When I got in here, people just said, read the book. And I read the book and then I would write on it and recite my writing to my sponsor. Now, I'm taking like three or four people through the big book, and I've been doing it for a while now, and it is a very powerful experience, even on the phone. Even on the phone, I've had people call me and say, I'm in a very bad place. My daughter just broke her ankle. I can't get to a meeting. I feel awful. And can you come to my house and read the big book? I'm like, why not on the phone? She goes, oh, okay. So we read, The Actor on the phone, and it's like both of us feel better immediately. So that's a really great tool. And, you know, what else? I feel like this is, I knew when I came in here that I, at least this was my intention, I did not think I was going to come in here and leave, ever. I knew that I took step one on a really deep basis where I knew that I am powerless over food. I have been obsessed with food since I was a child. One of my earliest memories is eating pickles and potato chips in front of a television set, like a bag of Wise potato chips to my left and a bag of kosher pickles to my right, either one paw in the one and the other paw in the other, and just zoning out on TV. I had no illusions that I would be changed, and neither did anyone around me, by the way. Yeah, it wasn't like I was hiding this disease from anybody. Everybody's like, oh, good, you're in a program. That's fantastic. So I still feel like I'm in here for the long haul. I'm in here a day at a time until I pass into the next life, and I'm really grateful to be able to be in here. And I don't, another thing that's changed is, in 5 minutes, I'll just wrap up. And I'm so glad of this topic because I really hadn't thought about it, what it was like the beginning and now. Like the beginning, I went to work all the time. I worked many, many hours. We worked like 60 hours a week. And I'd have my sponsees call me like, you know, 7:15, you know, 7:20. If you miss your call time, you know, forget it. I'm busy. Like, and then you have to wait till the next day and have them call Monday through Friday and get the weekends off. Now I'm like semi-retired. Like I have professions that I don't work so many hours on. So I just have more time to sponsor people and be available for calls. I spend a lot more time on the phone and also meeting with people. And I find it just, I feel like this is what God wants me to do. I feel like we here in Overeaters Anonymous, you know, every one of us, every one of you, we have an invaluable gift. We have been given nobody off the street can just do this. We have the ability to pass on our recovery from compulsive overeating to another person. If somebody else on the street says they want to help us and help us, say, lose weight, they can't. They can't. Only we who have had a spiritual experience and have changed through this program can help someone else. And I'm really honored that God has this program, that Roz started this program. Not this Roz, but another Roz. At first I thought, oh, my God, Roz, I thought she died. But but there's another Roz with a lot of time carrying on the tradition of Roz. Our founder, and I feel like we're very, very lucky to have this program. If you identified with anything, hold on to that. Like they used to say when I was new, what did they used to say? Something, but hold on to what you like and forget. Take what you like and leave the rest. That's it. Thank you. Good people going to meetings and know. Take what you like and leave the rest. If you don't identify, just throw it out. Just use what you can and keep coming back. Thank you.
Okay. And now Vivian. No. Jackie.
Hi, my name is Jackie. I'm a compulsive overeater and alcoholic.
Hi, Jackie.
Hi, guys. Oh, my God, this room is full. Yes, I guess I'll have to. Thank you. One of the things that happens when you're a long timer is that people think you know something. All the something I know from being a long timer is everything that all of the people who came before me were kind enough to tell me. And I can carry their message, like this lady's, because I heard them and I listened. I'm the baby of this group. I've got 27 years. Yeah, I'm the baby of this group. Okay. The gift that this program gave me is my life. 2 weeks ago, I was blessed with the gift of turning 75 years old. And when I was 57, I had a triple bypass. When I was in my 60s, I had breast cancer. And in October of last year, I had a stroke. If I hadn't been doing what I was taught in these rooms, I'd have never made it past the bypass. It wouldn't happen. The cardiologist told me that. So when I came in here at 47, had just done a huge unhealthy diet that left me with a cholesterol of 325. I wonder why I had a bypass. And I was gaining weight so fast, I had just clipped 200 pounds again. And I couldn't stop eating. I just couldn't stop eating. And I couldn't stop eating the sweetest sugar I could find. It was a therapist, God bless her, who sent me to OA. And the first time I walked in the door, and it was at the Sunday Woman's Stag on Riverside Drive in the San Fernando Valley. And there is this group of people, all different sizes, some normal-sized bodies, some very, very large-sized bodies, and everything in between. And they are laughing, and they are talking, and they are hugging one another. And I looked at the woman who was my Eskimo and had offered to sponsor me, and I said to her, I want that. That's what I want. I want to be at ease with other people because I never was. And I was a salesman, and I was a good salesman. But I could sell a group like this beads and trimming and fabrics and whatever the hell else I was selling. But to sit down with you one-to-one and have a conversation, not going to happen. Not unless I had sugar. So they told me that if I listened and I did what a sponsor told me to do, I could have what those ladies seem to have. It was the first time in my life anybody had even begun to suggest that I could find a way to live like normal people. And not with the food, but just, I mean, for the kid who liked to sit in her bedroom with Wonder Bread sandwiches with ketchup and mustard and mayonnaise on them and avoided others at all costs, that was a huge statement for me. So I started doing what I was told, one day at a time. And I very carefully picked a really tough sponsor. She had come out of AA into OA because, like I said, I was a salesman and I had excuses for everything. God bless Charlotte. Her suggestions were just, you call me at 6:30 in the morning. You tell me what you're going to eat for the day. This is what you read. This is what you write. This is what you do. And at the end of the day, if anything has changed, you let me know. Except with the food, if you're going to change something, you call me first. And I listened. I did what I was told to do. The weight came off. I had a very, very difficult relationship with God. I had lost a child, and I truly believed that God had taken the word I used then was murdered that child because I had sinned. And so that was the God I walked in with. And they taught me. What do you need in a God? What are you looking for? And she had me write a want ad. The want ad was what I wanted from a higher power. And it took me a lot of time because I didn't want that bad guy in the sky with the robe writing lists of what I did wrong. And I didn't know how to search for anything else at first. But it took a little while. I got it written out. I gave it to her. She said, fine, that's what you want for God. Now, what's your side of the job? What are you willing to give? And as much as I can remember it, what I came up with was something on the order of, what I have to offer is a broken, beat up woman, and I will try to do what you want as best I can. And she said, that's enough. All you have to do is try. It's not finding God, it's searching for. And so that was how I began. That was probably within the first couple of years. And it amazed me every year when I got to a birthday that I got to the birthday and I still was not eating sugar. I was not eating white flour. And I was doing what page 2 in the Brown Book of Overeaters Anonymous said, planned, moderate meals and avoidance of my own personal binge foods, sugar and white flour, which becomes sugar while it's still in your mouth. So the weight came off, and I just kept moving along, and then I had the bypass, and the cardiologist said, you will eat from all food groups. She said, there has to be grains. There has to be, you know, while I was healing. So I took grains back, and they never became the problem that they were before. But if it's white flour, I can guarantee you for the next 3 days, it's not that I want more bread. It's just that the plate looks empty. Same amount of food that I always take, and it just doesn't look like enough. So for the next 3 days, 3-4 days, I have to be really careful because, you know, 4 or 5 ounces of chicken can become a half a chicken if I'm willing to let it, and I'm not. There's a gentleman in the valley who says, and I love it, he says, I can eat what I want, when I want, as much as I want, as long as I'm willing to pay the price. I'm not willing to pay the price. With me, it's been a lot with doctors, and if it wasn't for this program, thank God. So I had the bypass, they took away red meat, cheese, anything fried, which I didn't mess with anyway. And then I go back and see her 6 months later, and she reads my blood work, and she says, oh, my God, you're doing what I told you to. And I said, yeah, of course. She says, no, not of course. People don't. I can't understand that one. So I said, okay, I've been in 12-step program for I don't know how many years it was then. I know how to take direction. So she said, oh, well, then you can have red meat twice a month. And I still come not, no, that was later. Can you imagine being one of us and not eating sugar, not eating white flour, and having somebody sit down and look at you and say, no red meat, no eggs, no cheese, no salt, no caffeine? I looked at her and I said, are you kidding? You know who I am. She said, yes, I know exactly who you are. No red meat, no eggs, no cheese, no salt, no caffeine. And that's what I get to do. I mean, I get to have red meat twice a month, no cheese, and now I'm allowed, just recently, a couple of eggs a week. But because of the program, because of what I was taught here, I knew how to do it. I knew how to accept what the doctor said and say, not go, oh, no, not me. Because the truth of the matter is, I'm not afraid of dying. I figure when I came down the chute into this world, I had already agreed I was coming in and eventually I'd be going out. But I am terrified of the other stuff. I don't want to be the person laying in a bed with a tube in my nose because I can't get up because my body doesn't get enough oxygen because my heart's so weak. I don't want to be the person. My late husband, may he rest in peace, had Lou Gehrig's disease, and it kicked his diabetes through the moon. I know the results of untreated diabetes or of diabetes. I've seen it. I lived through it. I don't want to be that. So this program has taught me how I can take care of myself. And also, and of equal importance, this program has taught me, somebody used an anagram the other day that, wait. Just wait. Why am I talking? You know, it's like, shut up, Jackie, be quiet. I have 5 children. By God's grace, I have 10 grandchildren and the 3 grandchildren from my late husband. I have, at this point, 7 great-grandchildren. And I have relationships, because of this program, I have relationships with my children, which one day at a time over a very long period of time, because they did not like me very much when I showed up. They loved me. I was their mother, but I was overbearing. I was always right, always knew how they should live, what they should do, what they should say, and if they would only do it my way, everything would be fine. These were 4 grown married children, a couple of them with children of their own, and my youngest was 19. I didn't have any place to be doing that anymore, but I was doing it because when I was in this disease, I knew I had to control everything around me so that I could manage to live in my world if it was controlled. I can't control anything. I can't control anyone. On good days, with God help, I can control me, but not always. Sometimes stuff falls out of the mouth. So if you haven't been around here for a long time and you're just doing it one day at a time, take phone numbers. The tools that we have in this program are amazing. If you take phone numbers of people who you see are living the life that you want to live, they'll be very happy to tell you how they got there. I have never received an outreach call that I didn't need more than the person who made it, because they always come in at the right time. But that's how you get your information. So one day at a time, through the years, I do what they tell me to do. There are now 9 tools, and believe it or not, although I consider exercise one of the single dirtiest words ever created on this planet, I now to go to the gym 4 times a week. And the reason was I had a lovely little physical therapist looked at me and said, "You have no glutes and no abs." And I said, "What does that mean?" She says, "That means if you want to continue walking upright as you continue to age, you need to do something about it." So I do something about it. Now I'm 75. I certainly don't go in there and run for 4 hours and lift 100 pounds of weights. I keep it healthy for what I need to do for my age and my body. But I'm doing it because I really want to continue walking upright as I get older. I want to be able to keep coming back here and seeing you guys and listening to what you have to say that teach me, constantly teach me. I heard that weight just about 3-4 weeks ago at a meeting. And now when I'm with my kids and my grandkids, and even harder with the in-laws, you know, everybody has spouses or husbands, you know, the parents of the son-in-law, the parents of the daughter-in-law. I keep stay quiet, keep your mouth shut, don't tell people how to live, don't tell people how to act. And I've learned in this program how to be pleasant and be of service. It's amazing how many people react just so beautifully if you walk up to them and you go, "Hi, I'm Jackie. How are you today? How you doing? By the way, I love your daughter. She's the best thing that ever happened to my grandson." Everybody's happy. And it makes my life a much easier place to live in. Without this program, I wouldn't be alive. So one day at a time, for 27 and a half years, I have been allowed to hang around these rooms, to have a fairly healthy body, to be somewhere with a normal weight range, and to get up in the morning, open my eyes, look out my window. I'm on the second floor, and it's all the tops of the trees that are the, I look right into the greenery and say, thank you, God. Thank you, God, for this day. Thank you for my home. Thank you for my program and my abstinence, because without it, I would have nothing. Thank you for letting me share.
Okay, now it's time for me to share if I don't fall down. Let's see. I'm not going to fall. Hi, my name is Roz, and I'm really happy, grateful, composable over here.
Hi, Roz.
Thank you. let's see. May 26, 1987, I crawled in the doors of Overeaters Anonymous weighing 400 pounds. I was 51 years old, and the doctors, three doctors told my mother and father and my husband and I that I had 6 months to live at the most. I had liver disease from the fat. I had, my diabetes was like 700. I was in and out of the hospital. I had heart disease. I had a heart attack. And I was morbidly obese. I could hardly walk without taking a nitro pill. And I couldn't stop eating no matter what. I went to everything, diet pills, drinks. I did everything I could. I went to Tops, and I went to that place where they call you fatty, piggy, whatever that was. Piggy? What was the place? I don't know. I did everything I could, but nothing worked. If I lost weight, I gained back double. And I hated myself. I hated myself. I hated myself. I had no self-esteem, no self-worth. I couldn't even talk in front of the kids in sixth grade school and make a do a book report. And I wasn't even fat. I just had a terrible sense of myself because I was brought up to feel I was fat. I was brought up by a mother who hid every food from me and wouldn't let me have it. And so you just get the sense that you're fat, you're no good, and whatever. But so when I walked into these rooms, I was treated so beautifully. I couldn't believe it. People actually said hello to me. I couldn't believe it. I remember there was a phone booth at Serenity Sunday before we had cell phones. And I had a therapist, and I called her. I go, someone said hello to me. They said I was nice. She said, just say thank you. I don't know what to do with a compliment. Because I was brought up to, and they said, my mom and dad said, no one's ever going to like you. So just remember that. And so when someone gave me a compliment, I couldn't believe it. I thought, oh, they don't really know me. What did they get to know me? That's how bad I felt about myself. So I kept going to meetings. I went to the 100-pounder meeting on Sepulveda, and they were wonderful to me. And the love that I've gotten in these rooms is the amount that I began to like myself. I used the dictionary to love myself. I had to look up every word that everybody told me because I couldn't believe that I was liked. I couldn't because I didn't like myself. The weight came off really fast. I got anorexic. I got 70 pounds thinner than I am now. And I wore little leather skirts and little leather clothes, just little. And I loved it. In fact, I went out dancing every night with all the young girls while my husband stayed at home in his shorts playing for me at the doorbell. Oh, well, I wasn't thin as not well. But my health started to improve. My numbers came down. I lost a lot of weight really fast. And I started to like myself. I had the best sponsor. I had Natalie. And God, all I can tell you, may you rest in peace, Natalie. She would say, fuck this, fuck that. Because when I moved to Orange County, I started to gain weight because there was only Hal. And I couldn't weigh a measure. I couldn't do it. On my 30th day, I'd eat bagels. And I'd call her and I'd say, but I'm not eating like I used to. And she'd say, it's a lie. it's a lie. You are eating. And she just gave it to me, but good. And I started back on the road. And she taught me I don't have to start over. That's what she taught me. I don't have to start over. And I began, I believe with all my heart, it's the steps. It's God. To me, it's God. I threw out my scale within a week. Because I was getting up and down before the bathroom, after the bathroom, before the shower, after the shower. I threw it in my husband's truck. I just threw it in his truck one morning. The only time I get weight is at the doctor's office. I gain weight sometimes and I lose it. I am not my weight. I am my soul. That's how I feel. I have three granddaughters that my husband and I helped raise. Now they're 21, 18, and one will be 16. He passed away. Him and I used to watch them every week. They miss their papa. He would take them for nature walks, and it was really good. And now they're adults, and they remember him with such love. I have this book. It's called The Good Grandma and the Strict Grandma. I pretend I'd be the strict grandma, and they go, no, you can never be a strict grandma. And you know what? My best days are only the days that I got into Overeaters Anonymous. This is when I began to live, here, right in these rooms. I don't think I ever lived before that. This is it. This is it. I have had a lot of accidents, breaking my back, breaking the neck, all parts of me, but I'm still here because I have a God that loves me so much. He's given me the opportunity to start meetings in Orange County, to sponsor, to be sponsored, to love and to love. And that's where it comes from. From a higher power that just sparkles, that loves me, that gives us all light. Like it says in the back of the big book, watch when a newcomer comes in. Look at the light in their eyes. Look at that light in their eyes. What happens? I used to be so strict with my food for the first 15 years. I was like a lunatic. If I took two bites of soup, I was finished. I'm not so strict now, but I'm careful, but I eat other things. But I have to be very careful because I don't want to get another heart attack. I have to be careful with the diabetes. But I can eat things now that I couldn't eat then. But I don't do it in excess. I've learned, somehow over the years, I've learned to be able to not do that. I can have something and not have another one, as long as I don't keep it in the house. But I can have stuff for my granddaughters and keep it in the house and never touch it. That's a miracle. This program is a miracle. For me, it is a miracle that I'm standing up talking to you. Me, who ran away from people, who didn't even have a friend. I do have one friend from elementary school. But I can't say enough. I worked these steps up and down. The steps. I sponsored the most incredible, wonderful people. And I have the best friends. My God squad is unbelievable. And there's a friend here who went to my first meeting who, when I took a 30-day trip, she called me and she said, I love your earrings, which my mother brought me. She said, will you meet me at a meeting? And she's here today and I just love her to pieces. And I never had friends growing up because I was taught that it was so bad and nasty that I would never have a friend. So I had terrible inferiority complexes. Today I don't have that. I can go around the whole place and just love everybody and meet everybody. That is such a miracle. I can't even believe that myself. I don't know. I really miss my husband. He is my best friend. But I'll see him someday. But you know what? He's in a better place. He was so sick. Today, I'm telling you that this program works. If you're having problems, stay here. There is no other place to go to. I've been to all the other places. It was like hell. I was in quicksand. Quicksand. I could not get out of the quicksand with the food. I'd go from one place to another place to another place. It was so bad. I don't want to ever go back there again. And I don't have to. Doing the 12 steps. Doing God's will, not mine. Praying. Meditating. Talking to my sponsors. Being honest in every aspect of my life. Being honest with the 12 principles. I don't have to do anything what I used to do. You wouldn't know me the way I used to be. You wouldn't know me what I used to be like. I was so angry. Today I can forgive. Somebody called me the other day with the nastiest message. And one of my sponsors said, I wouldn't call her back. I called you back. And I was very kind. I said, that was not a nice message. And she apologized. And you know what? I love all of you. And many of you, for sure, I'm so close to. And somebody here that I met with my first year, and she's in here from another place. She flew in. Not for me. She flew in for herself. But I'm going to end this quicker so you could ask more questions. I'm just privileged to be a part of this panel. I thought about not coming because I was hurting my back. And you know what? I'm so grateful I came. I'm so grateful to be here and see people that I know that moved away, Carl, and to be happy with all my friends. Thank you very much for allowing me to do this. One more thing was, I always said, I want to live before I die, and I'm living. Okay. Now is the time for questions and answers. Please raise your hand, and we'll call on me. You can ask for us specifically, or ask the panel. Please be aware that we're recording this panel. When asking a question, your voice may be audible in the recording. Who would like to ask the first question? We have more time now. Who would like to ask the first question here? First question. Everybody here is very shy. Does anybody in the back want to ask a question? Arlene. Oh, Arlene asked me, what was it like for when Natalie told me not to start over the time that I was gaining weight? It was wonderful for me. It relieved the guilt, and I got right back on the road. Mm-hmm. It was a really hard time in my life. I was in Orange County going to Howe meetings, and she advised me to start meetings. I was running to L.A. every Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And Roseanne and her kept saying, start meetings. Because I was so upset with hell. So I was resentful. And when you're resentful, you eat. That's what happened. Anyone else?
You can ask anything. It doesn't have to be super spiritual or anything. It can be anything at all.
Yes.
Came into AA in 80 and OA in 81, and I've had long periods of absence and then long periods of struggle in the program.
Well, we need to repeat the question. This gentleman, what's your name?
John.
John asked if any of us have had struggles with weight gain and loss. This is Vivian speaking. I spoke of going up and down, about 10 pounds. I have a 10-pound range. Do you feel like I've spoken on it? You want to hear from the others on this?
Yes.
So everybody here, Roz, we're passing it on.
I went up 18 pounds, okay? And I lost it. Yeah, just by doing the steps and writing an inventory and recommit my food. Writing my food down and committing it to somebody, that helps.
I have a range that I fluctuate in, maybe 5-6 pounds, somewhere in there. I avoid the scale. I don't have it around much because I can use that as either a baseball bat to beat myself to death with or a, oh, my God, look at how good that is. I can go do anything I want. But I have a pair of jeans that has no stretch, pockets, and a button. So when the jeans fit comfortably, all is well. When the jeans start getting too tight, I have to start looking for what is it that's bugging me that I'm messing around. I write down my food almost all the time because if the jeans keep fitting and everything's comfortable, all I have to do is go back and look through those pages and I can see what I've been doing and I can keep doing it. But when the jeans are too tight, I can go back through those pages and see what I found in the very calorie-dense foods, and there are some. I mean, it doesn't mess with my abstinence. My abstinence is no sugar and no deep-fried foods. So, but when there's heavy carbs and a lot of heavy calorie foods, all I have to do is cut back on them. It's real easy to keep track. Okay, he asked me how we sponsor if I do this thing that Natalie taught me. I sponsor if they don't go on a binge and they eat something, I don't have them start over. No. They write about it, they go back to step one or whatever assignment I give them. I am not strict. Because I couldn't have had that. And Natalie taught me so many good things. And I had someone before her that was like that, Kathy Pagoda.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay? And so if somebody eats something and she doesn't binge and go on and on, why? You have to start over. After you tell me, write about it, and you don't keep it up, why? What is it? Are we in a Nazi club? I mean, come on. I did that all my life with my mother. She was a Nazi club. I mean, she wasn't a Nazi, but she was brought up, I was brought up like that. You know? She was a kind woman. I'm not saying she, anyway, I can't get out of this.
There's a woman in the Valley who's been abstinent and at goal weight for 42 years now. And she shares this story. If she bought a car and she was driving to New York and the car broke down in Arizona, would she drag the car all the way back to Los Angeles to fix it or would she get it fixed and get back on the road? So I beat myself up for 43 years before I got here, 47 years before I got here. I'm not willing to do that anymore. In fact, it was at this very birthday party in 2002. I was in chemo for breast cancer. Chemo was full of steroids, and the doctor had also changed my food plan, so there was absolutely nothing that would have stopped me from gaining weight, period. And I had to do what he said. I was doing chemotherapy. He told me I would gain probably close to 30 pounds during my chemo. I think if he'd have said 20, it would have been 20, but he said 30, and that's exactly what I gained. And I also took it right off, right after the chemo was. But I was asked to be the closing speaker here during that time. And I said to the gentleman who asked me, are you out of your mind? I've gained 15 pounds. He says, you are doing exactly what your doctor is telling you to do to keep yourself alive. That is very important in this program. We need to know that. And so I did what the doctor said. The chemo stopped, and I started losing weight. And I went back to my regular food plan and got back to where I needed to be. And no, I did not need to start over.
And I'm Vivian. I'm going to weigh in on this, too, because we all have a different way of doing things. Usually, when I sponsor people, I ask them to take actions in the program, like go to 3 or 4 meetings a week, get a commitment at them, call me Monday through Friday at a certain time, and then we start reading the big book together. When it doesn't work, it's usually because they don't want to do those things. Oh, and they also, I ask them to write down your food for 30 days, write down, just tell me what you ate yesterday. So that they don't have to go, oh, my God, I ate a green pea more. I broke my abstinence. Like, no, first of all, we don't know what your abstinence is yet. You started a program, and so they write down what they ate yesterday. And then they tell me what they have a problem with. It just becomes obvious. Like, for some people, it's bulimia. My experience with sponsoring bulimics is just no purging no matter what. There can be no more restrictions or they just go off the deep end. So that's enough. Most people that I sponsor, if they want to keep doing the program, we keep sponsoring them, and they usually stay abstinent. I do remember, though, very recently I sponsored someone. Now, I am not the only sponsor in the world. Sometimes it's just not working between me and a sponsee. I was sponsoring someone who, she was bulimic, and she kept purging, and she was going to all these meetings, and she had commitments, and she called me every day, and she was actually a real help to me. Even at one point I had foot surgery. She was of service. I mean, all these things. But she kept on breaking her bulimia, and she kept on purging. And finally, after like the third time, I said, you know what? It's just not working between us. You know, find someone else to talk to. You know, I also, because I don't believe in beating a dead horse either. You know, there are just a lot of other people out there, and God has speaks through all of us.
Hi. Thank you so much. How do you keep your program fresh? Is there anything, like, do meetings get boring? Some way that you keep your program fresh?
I'm
dying to speak on this one.
Okay, go ahead. I'm dying to speak on this. Sponsoring new people. There is no better way to keep your program fresh than when they say, are there any newcomers in the room? And people put their hands up, and you go up to them, and then they say, who in the room, at least in the formats in our meetings, is available to sponsor? You raise your hand, and then you go up to them afterwards. Hi, I'm Vivian. Here's my phone number. And when I'm really looking for sponsees, I'll say, I'll sponsor you for 30 days if you want. And usually that's pretty appealing because it's not a big commitment. You're saying like, I care, but not like I want to take you to jail before you even know what you're doing because this is your first meeting. And there's just nothing that keeps it very fresh for me. Just going through the program anew with people. Jackie, Roz.
Okay, every day in the morning, I pray, I meditate, I read, and I get phone calls. All my sponsors, they call me during the day. Then I get a lot of outreach phone calls. That really helps me to talk to people I don't even know. And then at the meetings, we have the big meetings, our 100-pounder, we have newcomer meetings. So I talk to the newcomers and they call. That really helps me. You know, like you said, it really helps me to talk to newcomers, and I get a lot of newcomer calls. So that makes it new. And then talking to new people. And so I talk to a lot of new people, and I get a lot of outreach phone calls from LA and the Valley. in Orange County. So that really helps me a lot. And I read different things, and I do a lot of spirituality prayers and things.
Go to a meeting you haven't gone to before. You know? Go to a meeting you haven't gone to before. Take a job that you have not had before. Do something different. Just do something different. I mean, I go to the same meetings every week, and I talk to the same. I've had sponsees that I've had for 20 years. So I talk to the same people. And every now and then, you need to just kind of, like, shake it up a little bit. So you either take, like you said, a newcomer is always a great idea. Working with newcomers reminds me of what I used to be. And go to a meeting you've never gone to. Travel a little bit to go to a meeting. Go over the hill if you're a city person. Bestir yourself to cross the barbed wire road and come into the valley. And the same for us valley guys. If you want, go over the hill. Go to an LA meeting. We're a little bit different. You know, it's still the same thing. We're all compulsive overeaters, and we're all desperately trying to get healed. So move yourself a little bit. You can bring it new.
Yeah. Go to Orange County. So now.
Thank you all. I'd like you all to share about how you felt OA has changed for you. Flavor of your meetings. Changes you've noticed.
Changes? Okay. I'm not dead.
Summarize the question.
Oh, she wants to share how OA has changed us.
How OA has changed over the years.
I think it's completely changed from my first beginning. I started in Los Angeles. It was a very tight group. It was different. It was very different than it is now. Maybe I'm comparing it to Orange County. I don't know what I'm doing. No, it just was different. All the old timers are gone. Natalie, Doris, all that.
Oh my God, I've been sponsored by all those people. I didn't even know Natalie died.
Oh my God. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it's just different. I don't know. I don't want to cry.
Okay.
It's different.
Okay. And I'm going to say, not that much. For me, people are still working the steps. People are still coming in powerless over food. And so people are coming in, some desperate, not so desperate. Like Jackie said, they think they're desperate. And then you say, well, will you come to the valley? And they go, oh, really, the valley? So nothing's changed from there. You know, you hit a bottom when you hit a bottom. So to me, it's still, and I love that we still identify as compulsive overeaters. That's very important. I think we have to remember our primary purpose. There was a time in OA when we didn't, and everybody was ashamed to be an Overeaters Anonymous. And they'd say, I'm an alcoholic. I'm a cocaine addict. I'm this and I'm that. And I'm an overeater. In parentheses, but we need to be compulsive overeaters, you know, period. So I'm glad we went over that period. I think that was the weird period in Los Angeles, and now it's not like that. Seems the same to me.
The tools, the steps, the principles, the traditions, they're still the same. When I came in, OA, 12-step was very chic. Everybody wanted to be in 12-step program. They had television shows about it. They had movies about it. So you would come in, and there'd be huge influx of people. I remember when the Thalians was about 300-400 people. And so, but a lot of the people that kind of drifted away were people that were there for the social aspect. I think this program, no matter how it changes as far as volume, no matter how it, as long as we remember, we are compulsive over the eaters. We are here to deal with the fact that we have made our bodies unhealthy. I can't be Cheryl Teagues. I can never have that 7 inches between my hip and my ankle to be that much taller. That's not who I'm going to be. But I am here to be the healthiest, kindest, most loving person I can be. And that has not changed.
Okay, I have to make an amends to what I said, because I miss the old days. But I don't miss them really, because I'm alive, I'm healthy, and I have a wonderful program that I work, and I would be not here without it. So I do the traditions, I do the steps, and I do it, and the promises have come true. Thank you.
I think we're done with questions. Has it been 20 minutes? Yes. Okay. Roz, lead us out.
Okay. Okay. Thank you to our timer. Thank you, Jackie. And to all for participating in this panel discussion. After the serenity prayer, would everybody please clear the room as depending upon the timing. There may be another panel discussion right after us. Thank you for allowing us to be a service. Everyone stand and hold hands as possible.
We're going to do the serenity prayer because it says so in the writing here.
Okay, you say it. God, you say it. God, you do it. Wait for Jerry.
God, grant me the serenity.